All right, good morning. Welcome back. Hopefully everyone had a good break. Projects are looking really good. Overall, I'm really happy with the pitches that I saw on Monday, and I see most of you have already put up your blogs too. That's great. If not, please just put it up anytime today and send your link to the course mailing list. And feel free to follow other people's blogs. If someone's doing a project you're interested in, definitely stay tuned to their blog, and you're allowed to comment on it. I mean, don't like sabotage them and be like, oh, this is masquerade as someone else and be like, oh, this is a horrible project. But definitely give constructive feedback too. We want to have a community in this class. So, and I'll send a lot of your blogs to my friends. I have a number of friends in the industry that I think will be interested in many of your projects. So hopefully, if you see like random people start following your blogs, it's probably because I sent them to people. I know I had one student last year. He's like, man, I got these people following my blog. I don't know who they are. So that's kind of cool for you to see that. And please, early and often, I always say, get started on your project. Keep going right now, especially this week where homework 4 is not out yet. That's the only thing you really have to do right now. So I would just get an early start. And I will release homework 4 this Monday. We just haven't done enough GLSL yet, which will start today, for you really to be able to start on homework 4. So I don't want to hand it out too soon. Homework 2 has been graded, and those grades will come back very soon, hopefully today. Okay, so we spent probably almost 3 lectures doing the graphics pipeline, which, as I said, I think was great compared to last spring when I taught this. We only did like one lecture. So I think we have a pretty solid understanding really to move forward and look at how we actually program the GPU to do this graphics pipeline. And we'll talk about I think that's changing. So now we're going to look at OpenGL and WebGL. But we're going to start by looking at the shading language, the language that actually runs on the video card called GLSL, which is the OpenGL shading language. And this was out before CUDA. CUDA is like 2006, GLSL, I'll ballpark it like 2002 or so. And people used to hack up GLSL, which is a shading language, a graphics language, to do general purpose computing, which then CUDA came out, and now we see a lot less of that, or almost none of that. So before I talk about GLSL, though, I really want to show you a concrete example from a programmer's point of view of what I mean when I talk about fixed versus programmable pipeline, right? So before spring break, we looked at the GeForce 6 or even GeForce 8, where parts of the pipeline are programmable, meaning we can put our own code in those areas, and parts are just configurable. They're fixed. For example, the depth test is a fixed function piece of hardware that we can configure. We can turn it on and off. We can change the test to be less than or greater than, and so on. So I just want to give you something that's concrete. I'm going to use a really simple example of a technique called a light map, and I'm going to show you the simplest possible use of it, where a light map is just a pre-baked lighting intensity. So here on the left-hand side, I show pre-computed light. That's just a one-component luminance image, 2D image. Then in the middle there, the surface color, that's just a diffuse map. And if I were just to multiply those two together component-wise, I have what looks like a lit surface, right? And you might see light mapping. Maybe it's somewhat old school, but you might see it like in maybe Quake 3 or something. If you're walking down a hallway and there appears to be a bunch of lights, those lights aren't all computed up front or on the fly. So like if objects were to get in the way, they might not be lit by that light. And instead, the light is pre-computed and just burned onto the wall. So it's really an optimization technique. But at the end of the day, in our simple example, look, you're just multiplying two textures. So let me show you. This is some OpenGL code. And I know we haven't done much OpenGL yet, but we will talk more about it moving forward. This is how you would do this light map where you're trying to multiply two textures, configuring the fix function. The first thing I do here is I say GL enable GL texture 2D. I'm saying, hey, fix function pipeline, we're going to do texturing. We're going to read from two images. Okay, and then for each, I provide a light map texture, and I provide the surface map, or what I really should call a diffuse map. I provide the color texture. And then I do this crazy thing. GL texture environment F, where F means I'm going to pass floating point values to it as opposed to like integers, because this is a C-style API. And here I'm saying moduli, which means that I'm going to multiply these two values. The first value here for texture unit 0 is probably just multiplying like with a constant color, like white. So I'm configuring this pipeline saying I'm going to multiply. right? As opposed to me just like actually multiplying two values, I call a function to configure this multiply. And this is what I mean by something that's fixed function and it's configurable. Okay, I didn't know I had animation here. So when you have this fixed function API, fixed function hardware, and it's exposed through an API, you're limited as to what you can do with it, right? You can only do whatever the hardware allows you to do. That's all that you can expose. So, for example, here we're multiplying them, but what if I wanted to add them? Well, that needs to be exposed as well. That needs to be one of the enums that we would pass. You know, what if I wanted to pick the max value? Again, that needs to be exposed. OpenGL used to be this giant bloated API where it had all this fixed function pipeline available. All these different things were there. So, for example, there was something called the alpha test, which would say that if the alpha component of a fragment was a particular value, and you could configure the value, say 0 to 1, and you could configure the test. Does it equal that value? Is it less than that value? Is it greater than that value? You would, that's probably, maybe next semester I'll change these slides to use that example. But anyway, so you had this test, you can configure it. Here's the alpha compare value, here's the alpha compare function. Does it equal the value, is it less than, is it greater than? And that was part of the fixed function hardware, and you'd use that to do kind of like the fences we talked about, where if you're going to draw a fence, you know, it might just be planar geometry with the alpha channel, and then you discard all the fragments. Now, obviously, right in a fragment shader, we would just check the alpha. We just do an if statement. If alpha equals zero, discard. Right. So that went from fixed function to programmable. In general, the fixed function is a total nightmare. I mean, it's a pain to use. It's limited. It's verbose. Thankfully, a lot of it has gone away, and only parts of the pipeline now are fixed function. And the parts that used to be fixed function, now we can write shaders for. So let me show you an example of how we do this light map and a shader. And we're going to look at fragment shaders and vertex shaders from the start, but here's just a simple fragment shader. Here the input is two textures. They're called sampler 2D in this GLSO language. One of them is the light map, which is just a one-component texture. Another is the color for the surface. And then coming into this is a texture coordinate, right? Because we're going to need to know where we're going to read from that texture map. And here I'm just doing two memory reads, right? I'm reading from the light map and from the surface map. One of them I'm just taking a single channel. Another one is three channels. And then look, instead of configuring, calling some API, saying, hey, we're going to multiply, I just multiply by myself. I program it, right? So this is programmable as opposed to configurable. A lot more flexible, right? Because now, if I want to do add, subtract, min, max, anything like that, I can do it. Or I can do any kind of equation that I want in here, right? As opposed to having to rely on the vendor to implement new fixed function hardware and then expose that through new enums or new function calls within OpenGL. And then what happens here on the OpenGL side is we can get rid of a bunch of stuff. We're going to replace this enable because we're not turning on the fixed function pipeline. These things where we say, hey, multiply, we're getting rid of those too because those were fixed function related. And instead, we're going to turn on our shader program. We're going to say, hey, we're not using that fixed function stuff. We have our own shader program that can do that light map for us. And you see this GL star or GL draw star down here? Think of that as invoking your CUDA kernel, right? We're all familiar with calling our CUDA kernel. When we do draw, that draws our geometry. That pushes our geometry down the pipeline and executes our shader programs. The star there, that is not an actual function. That is, there are several different types of ways to draw. There's GL draw elements, GL draw arrays, GL draw instance arrays. There's a whole bunch of different ways to do draws. But when I put star, everything I'm talking about applies to all the draw functions. That's why I have the star there. It's just a wild card. Okay, so what questions do you guys have about fixed versus programmable pipeline? Hopefully it's pretty clear. Okay, so now we move towards this programmable shading. And, you know, in general, what we're going to do is we're going to write a shader, or just like a CUDA kernel. And it's literally a small program that's going to run on the GPU and replace part of that pipeline. So what we do is we code this in a language called GLSL, and we'll tell OpenGL to execute this when we go to do our draw call. And as we saw, right, we're going to wind up with less CPU code, less API calls. We're not going to have to call into the OpenGL API as much. And really, the old fixed function stuff, just like totally forget about it. I mean, you know, like the alpha test, like that would be okay if you guys never even knew that thing existed. And same with this this multi-texturing, texture environment stuff. And like if you have, I don't know, like if you're weighing two jobs for graduation and one of them is, hey, look, you're going to do modern OpenGL programmable shaders, and one of them is you're going to maintain legacy fixed function code, I would totally go with the more modern approach. And I've maintained both. In fact, I've taken a giant engine that was all fixed function, and we tried to make it updated to be all programmable, and it was very hard, to say the least. So this is my funny slide here where I say I would avoid the fixed function pipeline and go with programmable shading whenever possible. So here's a question that I've changed from when I asked it last spring. I asked, what should we target? Different GPUs have different levels of support. Some ancient ones are only fixed function. At that point, those are so ancient now that I'm not even going to ask you if we should go with programmable shading. The answer is yes, we want to go with programmable shading. I mean, it's everywhere. It's on all your phones, except maybe like the oldest iPhone or something. I think maybe the oldest iPhone is still fixed function. But there's different levels of shader capability as well. Like we're really going to focus on vertex shaders and fragment shaders. But then if you start getting into more recent hardware, you'll look at what Sean talked about with tessellation shaders and geometry shaders, and there's more capability. So if we were going to go do a startup or we're going to go do a new project in our company, I mean, how do we figure out what GPU we need to target? So as a technologist, my answer wants to be, I'm going to target the very latest hardware because I want to use all the cool programming features, right? That's what I want to do. Is that always a good idea? No. No, why not? Excuse me? Yeah, you can cut out a lot of your market. Sometimes a high-end game company, they may target very current hardware, and then by the time they finish their game, that hardware is almost commodity, it's pretty mainstream. Other times you may say that I need to reach the widest possible audience, so I'm going to not use the most recent features. So there's no one solid answer to this question, right? It really depends on your application. I will say that the OpenGL version 2 and OpenGL ES2 and WebGL, they all have basically the equivalent functionality, which includes programmable vertex and fragment shaders, and that is a very solid base. If you know how to use that, you can really target a whole lot of machines, and you can learn the more recent stuff easily. And I've actually done something, and it's a very capable API too. It's very capable, just having all those features. I've actually taken this class, what I would say, maybe a step backwards, in that last spring I did OpenGL 3.3. This semester I've changed these slides to basically be compatible with OpenGL 2. And it was actually very trivial, almost syntactic sugar tweaks that I did to the shader. But I really see that base is going to be around for a very long time, especially I think WebGL is going to like take over the world. Or at least I've banked my career on WebGL doing that. And definitely with the phones, like, you know, there's so many phones out there that all run OpenGL ES2. So I think that this is the way to at least teach the material. And then as you move forward in your careers, you guys can pick exactly what versions you're going to target. But let's look a little bit at the execution model for a shader. And I think this will be very familiar to you because everyone knows how we run CUDA kernels. And the shaders are similar but easier, would be my take on it. A shader is a little program that we write in GLSL, which is kind of like CUDA C. It has constant inputs that we're going to call uniforms because they're uniform across a primitive, across a triangle, or across a bunch of triangles. It has some streaming input. For example, a vertex shader will have vertices coming in, and a vertice can have multiple attributes like position, normals, etc., as we talked about. And the shader has output. In the example, the output of a vertex shader is a transform vertex. The output of a fragment shader would be the color and potentially other data, like a change in depth. Now, what we do is we have a bunch of shaders. I mean, we can observe that all these shaders can run in parallel. For example, if it's a vertex shader, each shader can transform a different vertex at the same time. And if it's a fragment shader, each shader can color or shade a fragment all in the same time, all in parallel, right? So it's just like a CUDA kernel. Now, okay, so I said the uniforms, every shader will share the same set of uniforms. They're read-only. And they just have different streams, so the different vertex come in each shader. Now, here's where I'm somewhat of a, where this was true when I taught this material. The shaders have no side effects, meaning that, like, you know, you can't go modify something in global memory, for example. And they can't communicate with each other, meaning there's no sync threads or there's no atomics or things like that. As of until OpenGL 4 made me a complete liar, right? So in the version that we're looking at with OpenGL, you can think of it as a very simple model where all these shaders are completely independent of each other. They can't talk to each other. However, when they can start talking to each other, we'll see some very interesting applications. So that's really it from an execution model point of view. You have a bunch of shaders. They run in parallel. They don't talk to each other. Data streams in, data streams out. They're called a streaming processor or a streaming programmer model. Okay, so here's something that I think is really important, and perhaps maybe the success of the parallelism behind graphics, is that we've been using GPUs for years, maybe for 10 years in the commodity space. We've been using OpenGL for a very long time. But in general, right, parallel programming is pretty hard, and definitely what we've learned in this course with doing CUDA and having to deal with, you know, with where our memory should be, how do we synchronize threads, and so forth. The thing with graphics and with OpenGL is that it's a parallel API, but it doesn't look parallel. Right, so when you do GL draw to say, hey, throw these triangles or throw these primitives down this pipeline, that invokes your parallel processor that schedules all your shaders to run in parallel. And we don't have to do anything else, right? So one of the reasons that it's been so successful is because users are doing parallel programming without even knowing it. Okay, so I guess I've already talked about what's in the pipeline, but we're really going to look at these two orange stages, programmable vertex and programmable fragment shaders. And I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to show you a vertex shader, right? This is, I could make a simpler vertex shader if I wanted to, but this is probably the simplest usable working vertex shader. And this is written, like I said, in GLSL, which is a C-like language that's really tailored for graphics. And we're going to look a bit at the syntax. Similar to CUDA C, you can think of it as. The top line there, uniform matrix, that is the model view projection matrix that we're passing into the vertex shader that will do the transformation from model coordinates to clip coordinates. And like I say, every different instance of this shader will have the same uniform input. Now that attribute vec4, position, that is the position coming in, you know, for one vertex. So if you were drawing one triangle, the shader would run three times, all independent, and each one would have the same model view projection matrix, but a different position. Now the shader itself, look, it's got a main function. It looks kind of like C. Oh, and it's got a typo. Position 4, I multiply it, this is a vector, I multiply it by the matrix, and then this is a built-in value, GL position, and that is how I determine the output. There's an error in this slide because model view projection is a 4x4 matrix. The input position coming in is a vec4, yet I reconstruct it as a vec4 here. I'm not even sure if this would compile. Basically, this vec4 right here with a 1 can just go away. And this should just be position times model view projection matrix. I'll change these slides. And you'll see these types, MAT4, VEC4. Those are built-in matrix and vector types that are awesome. They're very usable, and I'll show you lots of reasons why I think they're great. And there is a library that my buddy makes called GLM, and GLM brings the matrix and vector types and the GLSL math library in general into C++, and it is awesome. It is very, very good, and we'll use it in this class for homeworks 4 and 5, and I totally recommend you guys to use it. So what questions do you have about this vertex shader? This should be easy compared to what you guys have already done with CUDA. Okay, I already talked about all that. So here's another vertex shader where I've tweaked it a little bit, where now I still have one uniform. Okay, go ahead. No.
The previous slide, the projection matrix and the position, they're not automatic, right? You have to pass that in on the CPU side.
Right. So, in older versions of OpenGL, there were all these built-in uniforms, and they used to start with, GL underscore. So there was literally GL underscore model view projection, GL underscore model, all these different matrices. And when you called their fixed function API to be like, hey, this is my model matrix, this is my projection matrix, it would multiply those together behind the scenes, and they'd automatically be available in your shader. Now we've gotten rid of almost all of that. And we have to explicitly provide these matrices to the shader. And in the starter code, definitely for homework 4, maybe for homework 5 too, your shader will already have that data in it. Literally, when you guys start doing GLSL, I'm going to give you a working shader, and you're going to add one line of code. And then for the other homework, you'll add quite a bit more code. But really, you're going to focus on writing the GLSL code itself. Okay, so for this example here, we still have one model view projection matrix coming in, one uniform, but we have multiple attributes. Here, this vertex has two attributes. It has position and color coming in, so we declared both of them. And then coming out, we say that's a varying variable because it's going to vary over the triangle. We have FS underscore color for fragment shader underscore color, because it's just a naming convention here. Again, I multiply position by the model view projection, although now position is a VEC3, so I reconstruct it as a VEC4 if you multiply. I'll make these slides consistent, though, because I don't want this to be confusing for you. Either one is valid. Either input it as a VEC4 or construct it as a VEC4. For performance, I don't know that either one is going to get any different. And then here I just pass the color right through. Now remember, if we have a triangle that has three vertices and each vertex has a different color, That output right there, although we're just passing through the color, that's going to get interpolated during rasterization. Okay, so let's look a little bit at the fragment shader, and I'll go for 5 more minutes until we do the student presentations. So the fragment shader for input, it has what's called GLFragCord, which in X and Y is the screen space position of the fragment, and the Z value is the depth value. And then any of these varying variables that we output from our vertex shader, they can input to our fragment shader. And then any uniforms that we declare in the fragment shader, they're also input, right? They're constant across all fragments. And then as we discussed before, really the primary output for the fragment shader is the fragment's color, okay? Depending on the version of OpenGL, you can also change its depth, the fragment's depth value. In fact, when I go, I'm giving a talk at WebGL Camp Orlando on Friday. I'm going down to Orlando to talk about some WebGL stuff that I've been working on. I definitely will be asking for when we'll be able to have this feature right into the GL frag depth in the fragment shader, because it's useful for ray tracing, among other things. And then you can also discard fragments. One thing that we can't do is change the fragment's coordinates in screen space. So if something was in the upper left corner of the screen, we can't write a shader to move it to the bottom right. Why don't you think we could do that? So it would totally mess up the scheduling of the pipeline, right? The hardware/software has to figure out what fragments are running on what processors, and perhaps it tiles up the screen. And if we start moving these all over, the fragments all over in the fragment shader, the scheduling would become really off balance. And there's probably 100 other reasons why you can't do it as well. And I'm not sure how many use cases there are for doing it either. So here's a simple fragment shader. Again, it has a main function. It has a special output called gl underscore frag color. And here I'm constructing what should be a vec4. Oh my god, these slides are embarrassing. In fact, let me change that right in front of your eyes. So the output is RGBA. And here, what color do you think this fragment shader is? Outputs. Red? Right, so this would just shade a solid red primitive. Literally, this is what we would get if we use this. Now, what if we took that second vertex shader that we had that outputted the per vertex color? Now we just take that again, we declare it as a varying here in the fragment shader. And now we simply just pass that through. And again, that should be a vec4. This is freaking horrendous. So that should look like this. Vec4 1.0. And what that's saying is it's taking the RGB from the input FSS, FS color, and then the alpha, what you're saying, is 1. It's completely opaque. And here, since each fragment or each vertex output a different color, that color got interpolated during rasterization, the color coming in to the fragment shader here was interpolated, so now you get this shade in here. Yep?
Are the vertex shader and the fragment shader supposed to be connected together?
Right, so they're connected in the pipeline. In fact, if I jump back up a bunch of slides here.
Yeah, I mean, the input here should be the output of the vertex shader, right?
Yes, but look how the output of the vertex shader goes through rasterization.
But the output of the vertex shader is like GL position, but how do you use advantage?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So what happens is you output GL position, okay, but that is in clip coordinates. Now, part of the fixed function pipeline here is that that goes from clip coordinates into normalized device coordinates into screen coordinates as part of the fixed function. So GL position is realized really in the GL frag chord XY. Now, if your fragment shader needs to know the clip coordinate position, or more likely it might need to know your position in I coordinates, you can pass that through as a varying variable, just like we're passing through color. Is that clear? Okay, so I think I'm going to stop right there. Let's see what the next slide. Yeah, okay. So let's stop there, and on Monday I want to go through the syntax just to show you some of the really nice features in GLSO that are really useful for writing shaders. And I will go back through and fix a few of those mistakes with the VEC3 and VEC4 constructions, just so it's not confusing. But we have two student presentations today. Computational finance is up first. I'm logged into the main PC here if you guys want to use this. If not, you could use a laptop or whatever you want.